This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. My guest today is Thomas Joestlein, who is assistant professor of horn at University of Illinois School of Music. He's brand new this season, this academic year, most recently at the New York Philharmonic, and discovered that he and I share a few experiences, or at least people in aspects of our lives. We'll probably talk about that. But mostly what we're going to talk about today, or at least mostly what we're going to hear today, is an instrument that is sort of related to the French horn, and that is this. I'm actually looking at the small end of the thing, and I can't see the large end of this instrument because it's hiding under my music stand, which sort of tells you how long it is. It's like, what, 15 feet long, something
it's
like that?
It's about 12 feet. Good to be here, Kevin. Yeah, this is a mysterious instrument for many people. It is a wooden instrument about 12 feet, 6 inches long, carved out, just a hollow tube, and it's been seen on TV commercials. It's been seen in Switzerland, up in the mountains, heard very often, and it is the Swiss Alp horn.
So I imagine the most common place to hear it would be in the Swiss Alps.
In the Swiss Alps, yeah. In fact, when I was on tour there with the Philharmonic in Luzern just a year and a half ago, we encountered a pair of elderly gentlemen playing beautiful Swiss Alp horn duets. It carries for miles. It's a really beautiful sound and very calming.
I'm actually quite concerned, not about the calming part, because I mean the bell is right under my head.
Yeah.
And am I going to need to flee the room when you start playing this thing?
It depends how loudly I play it, but generally no. Alp horn music has a pastoral nature to it, I will demonstrate. I can demonstrate one little excerpt from a Brahms symphony that will display this pastoral quality, if you'd like.
Yeah. Before we get to that, though,
yes,
I want to talk about you just a little bit. How you landed in the New York Philharmonic and what that was like being there, and
right,
why aren't you still there and why are you here?
Right, exactly. New York Philharmonic was a culmination of life's pursuit of landing in a top orchestra, having played in Honolulu, Kansas City, Richmond, Omaha symphonies, and it took me 54 auditions total over my lifetime to win this New York job. Audition meaning you fly somewhere on your own dime and pay for all your expenses and play maybe 5 minutes, maybe more if you're lucky. It's a very strenuous and you could say stressful process of winning a job, but that's what musicians do.
Very different. I mean, from the corporate world, where if you have a job interview, you may get paid for. It's usually a whole long process, but this tiny little 5 minute thing, you got to pay for all this stuff on your own.
Right.
That adds up. 54 times.
Oh, I don't do the math.
All that stuff.
No,
it's
no.
Petrifying. You probably still haven't earned it back.
Correct. I've auditioned for Chicago, I think, Chicago Symphony 8 or 9 times. New York was a wonderful experience in many ways. The frustration I felt, and that my section felt, was that I come from a very so-called Chicago school of horn playing. Without getting too technical, Chicago style of playing tends to be a little bit more bright, a bit more brassy, a little more small of a horn than the New York style of playing. And so I went there, having won the job on my Chicago style of horn playing, and I switched to their instrument very quickly, and their mouthpiece, their whole setup, and their way of playing, and did so successfully. But I felt I didn't feel like myself after a while. It wasn't my voice. And playing assistant, which was my role, was also a very limiting job, in that you sit there and play between 5 and 100 notes a concert. You sit there for 20 minutes at a time, play one note. You help out the principal horn, do his job, basically.
Talk about that. Let's just take a break there and talk about that, because that's a foreign concept, probably even to most people in an orchestra.
Sure.
Because nobody else has an assistant except the first horn player.
We are pampered. Yes.
Yeah. What's the deal with that? How does it work?
The first horn has the most number of solos of any member of the orchestra, except for the first oboe player. So it's very much a solo instrument, and yet as you can hear, and if you go to a concert of the local orchestras here or hear a recording, the horns tend to have the big, the bold melodies, and we play for long stretches, and it's a very exhausting thing to do. And it's also a very difficult instrument to play, and we can get into that later too. But it's been called the hardest instrument to play. It's easy to miss notes on it, and the assistant is there to pamper the first horn basically and make him feel good about himself. And,
but technically, how does that work? I mean, there
technically exactly. Well, typically
it's an art to playing that role.
Right. Typically, the part is marked with brackets around the notes that I'm asked to play. And I sit there and I count rests. I count rests for the first horn, if to make sure he doesn't get lost. That's happened on occasion. And I remember playing Elektra with the Philharmonic in December of last year.
And Strauss.
The Strauss opera Elektra. And many passages are very complex, very thick, and very tricky counting. And there were moments where he wasn't sure where to play, and I had the score next to me with all the parts there, and I would follow that and point out exactly where to come in. And that's another delicate balance there. But basically, I sit there and count rests. Occasionally, I take over notes for him, such as if it's a long phrase and he wants to take a breath in the middle of it without making an obvious break, I will cover that note for him.
So you have to sneak in.
Right.
Dead on the note.
Right.
Sound exactly like him, theoretically, right. So nobody can tell this is going on.
Exactly. Which I did. First time I did that such a thing was live on PBS Nationwide, the Dvorak Cello Concerto with Yo-Yo Ma playing. And there's a wonderful horn solo at the beginning. It's about 8 measures long, I think it is. And there's no good place to breathe without making a very obvious. So I covered the note, and he gave me a little tap on the knee afterwards, which is a sign of approval.
So
and,
it went okay.
It went well. So yeah
good.
So lots of questions.
Well, I'm just thinking back to, I mean, listeners who are regular of this show may have heard me say in the past that I used to play this instrument, and in my intro promotional spot for the program that we've run for the last day, I said that this is a technically different instrument, and many people, including myself, are defeated by it. I was defeated by the end of my sophomore year of college because I went to major in the thing. And just as you're talking about this this experience of having to pop in while somebody else is playing, I mean, I would have splatted it all over the place. Mm-hmm, I mean, because a big part of playing the horn, isn't it, is psychological.
It is, for me, 100% psychological. And we can talk about our connection with Arnold Jacobs a little bit. I think you did an interview with him years ago. You were a student?
Well, I did an interview. I had a series of lessons with him.
Lessons, yeah. Arnold Jacobs was the tuba player in the Chicago Symphony for, I think, over 40 years. He passed away about 10 years ago. But he is really, he's the reason I'm here today. He is the father of modern brass teaching. And his whole approach to playing a brass instrument is based on having a song in your head as you're playing. In other words, as I play the horn, I have another horn inside my head playing the same notes constantly. And unlike a pianist who can think about lunch when he or she's playing the piano and still sound somewhat decent, you know, function at least, we cannot do that. We have to have a very active singer in our head as we're playing. And that leads me to the reason I left the Philharmonic. Besides the style differences, was that I want to share this at a major university platform where I have the motivation and the time to develop a great school of horn playing based on these Jacobs principles. So.
And as I remember a lot of the Jacobs principles, and I did do an interview with him one time. In fact, I've found out over the years from a number of people that this article that I wrote back in 1983 or something while I was still in college.
Instrumentalist, yeah.
Is still floating around and is being used by like Mike Ewald, who is the trumpet is the late trumpet professor at the University of Illinois. I found out that he was handing this article out to his students. And somebody when I was home visiting in Pennsylvania, my mom told me that somebody there, it was just kind of really bizarre. I mean, this thing that I got paid $250 to write. And that was it.
Wow.
You know, it was one of those, it was one of those done. They have all the rights, and they've reprinted it a number of times in different.
Of course.
Anyway.
Of course.
But the interesting thing about Arnold Jacobs and sort of the psychology was, I mean, he didn't teach me anything about how to play the horn. his assumption was by the time I got into his studio, I knew how to play the horn, technically. Mm-hmm. And he was largely right, but it's this playing mind games with yourself, singing to yourself, and hearing what you want to sound like. And the more clearly you hear what you want to sound like, the more likely you will sound like that.
Correct, correct.
Does that sound about right?
And not part of it? Not just even the color that you want, but more importantly, the specific pitch, the note. And if that is not accurate in your head, it won't be accurate in the lips, and therefore won't be accurate on the horn. You'll clam the note, as we call it. We'll miss a note. And that has many ramifications. Besides the emotional pain of missing a note, unlike string players, we have the physical pain, too. It doesn't feel good to miss a note. We feel like our throat is constricted, or our lips don't work, or our tongue is suddenly wooden. You know, I'm sure there are other string-related concerns, but if you miss a note, it's not as painful or as uncomfortable as it is for us brass players. And we're very concerned about how we feel each day. How do my lips feel? Can I play today? That's a very strong thought when we wake up in the morning. So.
Just to relate it to maybe one other field, which just a few moments ago we found out we have in common. We both play a little bit of tennis. And I've been watching too much of the Australian Open right now. And, you know, my mom has said a number of times that she doesn't understand, given what all the, you know, what these famous tennis players earn, how they can possibly miss a serve, you know. But if you see one miss, they miss a serve, and they might miss another serve or do a double fault, there's a reasonable chance they're going to do it again because of what it does to your mind. And somebody told me once, also years ago, that if you were to engage in the really useless activity of sitting at a professional orchestra concert and counting the number of mistakes that were made, chances are they would mostly come from the horns, because you wouldn't hear the other ones, for one thing, and there wouldn't be as many made. And second, if, say, the first horn player made one clam, you know, screwed up one note, you would probably hear another one shortly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which sort of, again, that just speaks to the whole psychology thing. Just.
It does, and the mind remembers a successful response for future use, also remembers a failed response for future use as well. And what's neat about the mind is we can do visualization, we can do going to the movies and watching yourself be successful without actually playing the horn. And for our subconscious mind, that's as powerful as actually having had that experience. So that's part of my teaching as well, is to visualize success and to hear lots of great recordings of great players. I have my students actually play along pretty much every lesson. I put on a great recording, Dennis Brain or some fantastic horn player, and I put a mute in their bell, meaning something that dampens the sound, and they play along with the recording as if they were that artist. Mm. And it makes them not hear themselves, and makes them play as if they were like Dennis Brain. And it's a very liberating thing to do. And I do that a lot when I prepare for concerts, too.
Sort of like going to and practicing in a very resonant space. Mm-hmm. It always makes you play better because it sounds so cool listening to yourself come back.
Right.
And then you just play. You play like you want to sound because...
Right.
Yeah, it's just a wonderful experience.
Right.
Well, let's hear some playing. I know you didn't. You brought your Alp horn today, so we're going to hear a recording you brought of one of the pieces you're playing on both of the programs that you're doing this week. So let me remind folks that
actually, the Alp horn is just for tomorrow's program.
Just for tomorrow.
For the Cantor Center.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to hear some Mozart, not on the Alp horn. So reminding listeners, first of all, this is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and my guest today, Thomas Joestlein, who is a horn professor at the University of Illinois. He's performing twice this week, tomorrow at noon, a free program for about an hour at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute, which is located in the main Carl Clinic campus, on the main Carl Clinic campus on University Avenue in Urbana, free program for about an hour. And that includes the piece we're going to sample in a moment, and this instrument called the Alp horn. And then he's playing again on Saturday, his own recital, only on the horn, the French horn, includes the Mozart and some other music. That's at Smith Recital Hall, Saturday night at 7:30. So we have here, I've forgotten which recording, you can tell us, of first movement of the Mozart
Horn Quintet. Mozart Horn Quintet. This is with one of my favorite players, Radovan Vladkovic, playing the horn, with many luminaries playing along. Mostly from the Berlin Philharmonic, string players. So, but what's neat about this piece, the Mozart Horn Quintet, is that it's written for horn, violin, two violas, and cello. And unlike a string quartet, which tends to have, well, which normally has two violins and one viola, this lends a very dark and rich quality to the sound. And which I find interesting because the horn is very much in that viola register. And you'd think that Mozart would write something that is not in the same tessitura as the horn, and yet he does. And I'm thinking maybe it's just because he had some friends that played viola at a party. I'm not quite sure about the genesis. Actually, no one's sure of the genesis of the piece. It's a very dark instrumentation. It was written for Josef Leutgeb, who was the dedicatee of Mozart's four horn concertos. This was kind of the funny uncle that Mozart never had, and he owned a cheese shop in Salzburg, and Mozart loved to play pranks on him, writing funny things in the music. And this quintet is, for me, I think, greater than the concertos. It's just full of wonderful horn parts, probably the most complex writing for the horn, much more than the concertos, much more demanding, more taxing, I think just the most beautiful music I've ever heard of Mozart. So this is the, yeah.
First movement of the quintet for horn and strings of Mozart. That was the opening movement of the Quintet for Horn and Strings by Mozart, and we heard Radovan Vladković, is that his last name? Who was a Croatian horn player with string players, mostly, I think you said, Berlin Philharmonic members.
Yeah.
And that was on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Our program today is supported in part by Bloomington Normal NPR affiliate WGLT, hosting Jazz Cabaret, an evening of dining, dancing, and cocktails in the Uptown Normal Marriott Hotel, featuring crooner Matt Belsante, Saturday, February 6th. And you can find details at WGLT.org. I'm going to take a break here just for a moment. My guest is Thomas Jostlein, who is a horn professor at the University of Illinois School of Music, to do our events calendar, mostly because I keep forgetting to do it at the end of the program. And in any way, pertains to, in part, to why Thomas is here. He's giving a recital or a program tomorrow with some colleagues of that piece, the entire piece you just heard a sample of, the Mozart Horn Quintet, and the Alphorn that he's going to demonstrate rather shortly. But that's at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute, which has a concert series every Thursday at noon, free program in the lobby there. And we have in the studio also with us the woman who was responsible for that concert series, who is Barbara Hedlund. And I thought I'd give you a chance to plug maybe some of the other ones coming up.
Thank you, Kevin. It's nice to be here. Happy New Year. We have tomorrow's program will be program number 64.
That's incredible.
In the lineup so far. We started in the fall of 2008. And this semester we have performers. William Hylas opened the series last week, pianist. Thomas is, of course, appearing tomorrow. We have members from the Parkland Theater cast presenting excerpts of Nonsense II, The Second Coming, Jonathan Keeble, the flutist, who had the wonderful success with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Saturday night at the Granite Center, is appearing. The opera program will be bringing in selections from South Pacific. The U of I Theater is bringing in music from American film. Stefan Milenkovic, the wonderful violinist, and Rohan da Silva are appearing in March.
That should be
stellar.
Yeah.
They both appeared with the Prairie Ensemble last year in a very inspiring program. Jacob Adams is a wonderful doctoral pianist who's going to a competition in Europe. I believe it's a Bach competition, and he's going to be presenting his program Mills before he goes to Europe. The Chorale is returning with a program. CU Theater is coming in with selections from Rent. Shall I keep going?
I've already lost track. Yeah, listeners will too. But it gives a nice idea of the nice variety on that thing. And you sort of hinted at one of the advantages to having for certain people to come and play on it. It can give a bit of a preview of something that's coming up for you. Like in this case, Thomas, you get to sort of warm up your concert maybe.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. And it seems like a rare thing in this community to have a series like this that pays artists to play whatever they want to play with a great audience, a very appreciative audience watching.
So in a nice resonant space, too.
It's a very resonant space. We were very blessed to have been given a Steinway piano that was fully restored. And it's a wonderful service that the Carl Foundation provides for patients and the staff and the community. And I've literally watched over the last year and a half people transform from being at the series while they were either waiting to be treated or waiting with a loved one, or people who just love music and want to come out and maybe don't like to get out at night, or they don't have the resources to always pay for a program, but they've really been very steady listeners and attendees to the series. So we're enjoying the possibilities of giving this to our community.
That's great. And 64th program?
Tomorrow will be 64.
And yeah. You've got the rest of the academic year lined up.
I do. Like. And if anyone is interested, they can go to millshope.com. And on the right side of the page, it will show the entire lineup between now and July 1.
Millshope.com.
Right.
Great. Barbara Hedlund, thanks very much. Some other things coming up this weekend, and this is not a complete calendar by any means. There's a number of things I don't have on it, but here are some that I do. Denise LaGrassa is a singer-songwriter. She's going to be at the Park Hotel in Normal Friday night at 6:30. The University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra, not to be missed, by the way. That's a wonderful orchestra. That's tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The Red Mask Players in Danville are performing The Diary of Anne Frank tomorrow and Saturday at 8 o'clock, both evenings, at the Catherine Randolph Theater in Danville. Barbara mentioned Nonsense 2, The Second Coming. The musical is at Parkland Theater in Champaign. That's Friday and Saturday at 7:30. And I don't think they have a Sunday. Then they're on next weekend. And I think we're going to have Tim Shermer, who's the music director, I think will be here tomorrow, as will Michael Rouse, who is responsible for Michael Rouse's Gravity Radio, which is going to be performed twice at the Krannert Center this weekend, Friday and Saturday at 7:30 each evening. And I will mention three looking ahead on Sunday. The Prairie Ensemble, which Barbara and I are both involved in, is presenting Stravinsky's The Soldier's Tale and David Baker's homage to that piece at the Canopy Club, the rock club in Urbana on campus. That's Sunday night at 6:30. A guest artist recital by the Sao Paulo State University Percussion Ensemble is Sunday at 3 at Smith Hall on the University of Illinois campus. And then two faculty recitals at the U of I. Tubist Mark Moore, that Sunday afternoon at 3, and William Hylas, pianist, is Sunday evening at 7:30, both of those recitals at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And as I said, that's not all, so it's a very busy musical weekend. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. And now, the Alphorn. Thomas Justlein is here to play the Alphorn. And for those just tuning in, let's re-describe the thing. Where does it come from, and why are you playing it?
Sure. I'm playing it because I love the sound of the Alphorn. That's why I play it. Also because it's a very liberating instrument in the sense that there are no buttons to push on the thing. There are no valves, no fancy tubes. It's just a straight 12-foot-long piece of wood carved out with a hole in the middle.
Well, it's not quite straight. It starts narrow, and then it gets bigger, bigger, and then finally...
Good point. It's mainly straight. At the end, there's a nice flare that curves up with a beautiful, it's hard to describe on the radio, but a beautiful interlocking piece of colorful wood. You can see tomorrow at the concert. but it's just a natural instrument. There's nothing fancy about it. They were originally thought to be carved out of a tree that grew on a slope of a mountain, and the end would have a little crook in it. That would be what you see now with the alp horn. I asked my alp horn maker about this, and he said it's just a myth, that because to find a tree that's perfectly shaped for an alp horn that's like that would be very, very, very hard to do. And this one's actually out of several pieces that are glued together and fitted with brass fittings and all sorts of tricks.
I was just going to ask, you said you're alp horn maker. Where do you get one of these
Yes.
things?
Well, this one I happened to actually buy in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, at the horn convention a couple of years ago.
The Alps of the South,
the
right?
Alps of the yeah. South. But I bought it. No, that's being funny because the gentleman who sold it to me purchased it in France a number of years ago. I actually have several alp horns. The first one I purchased in near Luzern, and this was a funny situation because I was expecting an idyllic hut in the middle of the woods with an old man carving alp horns, and no, it was like a little like industrial complex of offices. And I pull up, and there's a Japanese tour bus there with all these tourists coming out playing. They go in the store, they play every alp horn they see, and it may cause a huge racket. And there goes my idyllic image of an alp horn carver. And he was using machines to carve out the thing. But anyway, so I've got this one now that's much more beautiful and much more of a real craft instrument.
Well, let's hear what it sounds like.
Let's do it.
I'm very curious. And I'm going to get out of the way. It's really making
please,
me very nervous.
Please.
The bell is right at my aiming right at my head.
I'll play for you just a little sample from, this is from the Brahms First Symphony. There's a wonderful moment in the last movement where the strings play just a background little scrubby little thing going on, a little tremolo, and the first horn player gets to play this beautiful alp horn call. It'll be a different key, apologize for that. But this is a melody that Brahms actually heard in Switzerland on vacation and wrote it on the back of a postcard, sent it to his wife, and added words to it. Hoch in dem Berg, tief im Tal, grüße ich dich viel tausend Mal. High in the mountain, deep in the valley, I greet you many thousand times. So this is the Brahms First alp horn.
But before you play,
yes.
I mean, let's clarify something. In a symphony orchestra concert, the
yes.
horn player does not break out an alp horn all of a sudden to play this.
Correct. No. It
would
no.
reach to the front of the orchestra.
It would reach the front of the orchestra.
And knock the conductor off his podium.
All the above, and not to mention, as you'll hear now, there are some characteristic, deliberate, out-of-tune notes on the alp horn. There's one very obvious one that you'll hear in this little excerpt, which wouldn't work all that well in today's discriminating audience, for them. So,
which is not to say anything against the discriminating audience for Live and Local.
There we go.
Here we go. The alp horn, Thomas Justlein's playing it. I'm getting out of the way. So now I want to hear the rest of that moment of the symphony because I couldn't remember in advance. Now, what is this tune going to be? It's been quite a long while since I've heard
right,
that.
Right.
I want to ask you a technical question. Earlier on, we were talking about the difficulty of the instrument, and right before the one note, there was this little
right.
Is that an example of the sort of thing that can happen easily on the horn?
Yes. And the first note I didn't have exactly in my note correctly. I don't have perfect pitch, and I could have tested it, I guess, but... a horn player's life is very risky, so you accept that. But yeah, that's an example.
Curious. A beautiful sound. It really is a beautiful sound.
Yeah.
But I am still glad that I got out of the way of it. What else did you bring? You brought something, a longer piece, a solo piece for this instrument.
I do. I'd be happy to play that. This is a piece written by William Hobson, who is the second horn player, French horn player, in the Calgary Philharmonic. And he fell in love with the alp horn to such an extent years ago that he discovered how to make them himself. And he is now North America's preeminent alp horn player and alp horn maker also. And he uses all kinds of woods from koa to pine to spruce to African woods. And they're lovely instruments, very, very beautiful. Any rate, but the point is he's also a composer of alp horn pieces. And here's a little piece I will play for you. I'll play the full piece tomorrow. I'll just do a sample today. But this is variations. These are variations on a traditional Swiss melody called Moosruf, which means a call to the moss, all right? The moss on the trees. It's a very nature-inspired kind of piece. And it's by Bill Hobson. So this is you'll hear some very nice trills and some very, very interesting sounds coming out here. So
I'm looking forward to it.
Here we go.
Thomas Yostlein, horn professor at University of Illinois, playing on the alp horn here live in our studio on Live and Local. And we're adding a little mountain ambiance around the thing.
Cowbells.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know if Mike Pritchard, our sound engineer, has arranged for cowbells. I guess we'll find out in a moment. That was a sample of the sound of the alp horn, played by Thomas Yostlein. Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, our show sponsored in part by World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jam, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. And just as that mention made me rather hungry. That sound, Thomas Justline, made me want to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Very different than here in the state of Illinois, you know, in this flat countryside, somewhere where there's snow and heights and wonderful vistas and
it
so
on. It belongs outside and not in a 15 by 15 recording studio like this.
Have you ever had the experience of playing one of these things in the mountains?
Mountains.
Or something like that kind of a setting?
Yeah, the best setting I've had was the cathedral in Richmond, Virginia, where I lived for a while. An enormous Gothic.
You lived in the cathedral?
I lived in the cathedral for a while, up in the belfry there and with the bats. But a very, very long resonance. We're talking 6 or 7 seconds. And that's where you want to be, because you can play chords with yourself. You can play an entire harmony with one instrument because it's ringing that long. It's a fantastic, fantastic sound.
That kind of resonance. You just play one note, play another note, play
a
few more, and then they just stack on top of each other.
It's wonderful.
Sail away.
Yeah. So tomorrow we're doing not just this piece, but also this wonderful Sinfonia Pastorale of Leopold Mozart, who was Wolfgang's father, of course. And Leopold, as you might know, wrote several silly pieces. I shouldn't call them silly, but they're little. They involve an unusual instrument. There's one.
The Toy Symphony is the one.
The Toy
I'm
Symphony
of.
Is the one.
And that is silly. I mean, that's just flat out silly.
It is.
There's one that has dogs barking in it.
I don't know that one.
I think, if I'm remembering
maybe.
Right.
But there's one for bagpipes, hurdy-gurdy, dulcimer. There's also the sleigh ride that he wrote with the sleighs going on, sleigh bells, I should say. And this one is called Sinfonia Pastorella. It's scored for strings and a so-called corno pastorito, which who knows what that is, pastoral horn, which many have identified as the alp horn. The alp horn is a folk instrument. It's been around for centuries in different guises, and Leopold must have heard one of these outdoors and thought it'd be neat to stick it in a concerto of sorts. And as you'll hear, though, it's not a very pastoral-sounding piece. It has a real dance-like rhythm to it and is, for me, actually very, not all that alphornistic, not traditional alphornistic. The alphorn, for me, is long phrases, long notes. It was actually created and used for many years to calm the cows during milking time, to help soothe them. It has a very soothing quality. But this piece that you're about to hear, this is just the presto movement, is much more of a romp than a idyllic hang, I guess.
So some other things you can do with the alphorn besides calm
the cows.
Yes,
very versatile.
This is the last movement of Leopold Mozart's piece here on Live and Local. Music by Leopold Mozart for, in this case, alp horn and orchestra,
String orchestra, yes.
Mm-hmm. And the final movement of his pastoral symphony, very short symphony. And you can hear all of that performed tomorrow at noon for free program at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute at Carl Clinic on University Avenue in Urbana as part of their weekly free series, Thursdays at noon for about an hour, and Thomas Justline will play the alp horn, which we have heard demonstrated here. And Barbara Hedlund is the coordinator for that music program. Who else is playing on that concert?
The performers tomorrow will be Shanae Kim, violin, Jeon Kim Schleicher, viola, and Jan Matthews, violist, and I'm playing cello. Yeah.
That should be very nice. There's a nice bunch of players there. Now, you brought along, Thomas, a rather different treatment of the alp horn either of the things we've just heard.
No, the alp horn is now reaching into areas of jazz and funk, and it has a very limited number of notes possible, but there are some beautiful bluesy notes involved in the overtone series, the notes possible on the horn, And here is a Russian virtuoso alp horn player, also French horn player, but alp horn player primarily. His name is Arkady Schulklopper. And he is playing, I believe it's just by himself, with numerous microphones and foot pedals and playing on top of his own playing with a... you'll hear it.
This is called the
Dragon's Dream.
Dragon's Dream.
Dragon's Dream. All on one alp horn.
There you have what do you call
Arkady Schulklopper playing.
What do you call it? The blues? What do you?
I don't know.
It's whatever it is.
Yeah.
But all one instrument, mm-hmm. playing chords with himself. That was not a trick, by the way.
No. I was actually speaking a different track. I apologize, but that's. But he was singing with him.
How do you do that?
I can demonstrate. You basically sing while playing while buzzing your lips. It sounds like this.
I used to try that when I played French horn. I could never relax enough to do it, which is part of the trick of it, is being able to be free mentally and physically. Well, Thomas, it's been a pleasure to have you on, and we're going to have to do it again and bring your horn.
Yes.
And bring your wife, because
I will.
She also plays horn.
She is. She's a fabulous horn player in her own right. She's a co-principal of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony. And plays in the Dacamera also locally.
Symphony Dacamera.
Symphony Dacamera, yes. And was principal horn of Omaha Symphony and has played all over. Also.
Right, so I'll have to have you do some duets. Briefly, what else is on your concert Saturday night?
Briefly, it's all music with great artists, great friends. The Mozart Quintet opens the program. We're doing five songs by Arnold Cook, a British composer, along with Yvonne Gonzalez-Redmond singing, and she is fantastic faculty member. And ending with the Brahms Horn Trio with Ian Hobson on piano And on violin, a former colleague of mine from my school days at Rice from 20 years ago, Zachary Keratin, who is now doing a conducting major, is playing the violin part. And he's just a great musician, and it's a real pleasure. Everyone on the program is a great musician. So
that should be a wonderful
great
show.
Great fun, yeah.
So that's Saturday night at 7:30, Smith Recital Hall, Thomas Uestlein Faculty Recital. He is the professor of horn at the University of Illinois, brand new this year. And again, that program that includes the Mozart and the Alp horn tomorrow. You won't hear the Alp horn on Saturday. Tomorrow at noon at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute in Urbana. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Thank you, Barbara Hedlund, for joining us as well.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
And this is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Here is a fragment of the Brahms Trio for Horn, Piano, and Violin. It's the last movement.